I'm Gab. He's Jules. It's a sunny Thursday in West London, except for one little region above Jules's head. He's a little bit like Pigpen from Peanuts, right? 2-1 down at home from the first leg.
Let's do the second leg.
There you go. Of course, we'll be getting into City and Paris Saint-Germain. We'll be getting into Bayern. If only. We'll be talking about Bayern and Nagelsmann. We'll talk about the other semifinal, Real Madrid and Chelsea. Well, we'll be going over many of the big stories around Europe. But, of course, we're going to start at the Parc de France, where Paris, as for some stupid reason, my sports broadcasters keep calling them. 1-0 up. It looked like, it wasn't just 1-0 up, but it looked to me like City weren't creating, and Mbappe and Neymar especially were terrifying the defense in the first half. And then it all flips.
Yeah, it worked for an hour really well, because even just before the De Bruyne goal, there was that big chance for Mbappe and Verratti and the cross that I think if Verratti, instead of being a size 6 or 7 maybe because he's got small feet, if he's a size 9, like you, Gab, or size 10, I think he scores that cross and it converts it into a goal. After the hour, though, I think physically PSG dipped. It was a lot of effort to keep their shape, to defend the way they did for an hour, to attack the way they did, to keep the ball. But it's tiring to keep the ball against this City team that pressed so well, especially after the half hour where they really, really, I think, got more aggressive, pressed better. And I think PSG physically is starting to go down a little bit. And against City, if physically you're not at your best, they will come back and get control of the game. And that's what happened for the last half hour. It's a shame for PSG, but City forced them to make mistakes, played much better for the second half and the last half hour.
I think that is a bit of a theme of where we are late in the season, where, somebody said even a month ago, we would have seen a better performance for 90 minutes out of these two teams. And, people say fatigue, too many games, whatever. I do think it is a factor. It is a fact that it adds up. Now, some people will be like, if players are tired and fatigued and fitness, then they'll make mistakes, and that makes it more exciting. Yeah, but I want to see these teams beat each other up when they're not making mistakes because they're good. And obviously, there were a number of mistakes. Both of Man City's goals were the result of pretty craven errors. Let's quickly go through the goal. And in fact, I would argue Marquinhos' goal as well.
Yeah.
Was also as wonderful as Marquinhos is.
Why is Gundogan marking Marquinhos? Since when Gundogan can mark one of the best header of the ball in the world?
I think Stones was on Verratti as well.
Which makes no sense whatsoever.
It is interesting because, just dealing with that, because we had this idea in the past that because City play attractive football and pass and move and whatever, that somehow they were shaky on set pieces. But I think the numbers show that they really improved on set pieces defensively. So that to me seemed really odd. I do think the deliveries were really, really good for Paris Saint-Germain, which I think makes it a lot easier. But then there was also the Paredes chance in the first half. Again, not the guy you want heading the ball necessarily. Nope. But and then City's two goals, do you blame Keylor or do you blame the defenders?
It was a big debate yesterday in France. I think he's far too passive. And I know it's a difficult one because he expects someone to get a touch on that cross. It is a cross that goes in. But for me, he's on his heels. He's too passive. He's not reactive enough. And for me, that one is for him.
It is a bit in his nature. He is a tremendous goalkeeper, but he relies so much on his athleticism, his shot stopping, his reflexes. He just feels more comfortable there, than coming out. And look, I thought somebody was going to get a touch. Kaylor thought somebody was going to get a touch. So stay where you are, right?
I guess so. The second one, though, at that level, I'm sorry. And we talked a lot about Wolves and Cristiano Ronaldo and Juve against Porto. But Paredes and Kimpembe on that, I'm sorry, you can't take. I don't know if it's on purpose because the ball was coming, but they get your body on the line, get that ball hit you, and then at least you don't concede that goal. It's a crazy goal to concede in the semifinal of the Champions League.
So what was odd to me about? Well, first of all, I mean, he puts it, he threads the needle with that. I know it's not one of those because they do jump, and obviously the little hole opens up.
Yeah,
but it is a really, really small hole. And the ball shoots through there.
I know, but it's a bad free kick. It's a really bad free kick. This is a free kick that should never go in. At any level, Sunday league, pub football, whatever you want to call
it. I think we blame Kaylor too, because he assumed the wall was going to deal with it.
Yeah, so you can't blame... this one is not for Kaylor, but this one is for Kimpembe and Paredes, who don't stay close to each other in the wall, who just create that little hole, even if it's just little enough for the ball to go through, it's unacceptable.
You are taught, I think, generally in the wall, to jump, to stay touch tight to the man next to you.
Usually you even hold each other's arms.
Yeah, maybe in France, but...
No, but that's what you should do, so there's no holes.
Yeah, or even as we often see people turn as the ball comes in, which obviously you're frowned upon, but there is a way to do that where you increase your volume and you can do it without allowing gaps to appear. Mm. One other point I want to hit, which I loved about this game, which to me like kind of defined the game, right? Here we are. I think it was after a tackle, right? And Pep was on the sideline. And Verratti, who I hasten to add, is Italian, playing for a French team, goes to a guy who's Catalan, playing for an English team. And again, we can go, the French team owned by Qatar and the English team owned by Abu Dhabi. And he shouts at him in Spanish, you know, what the hell are you looking at, right? I just love, and you know, I just love the globe. Here I am watching it on a Korean TV in my house. I just love the whole sort of global nature of this moment.
Yeah.
And by the way, this was the joke that people made in Italy, but it is true. Obviously, Pep Guardiola speaks excellent Italian, having lived in Italy for many years.
Really good interview as well.
And to which the joke was that he speaks much better Italian than Verratti speaks Italian. So maybe that's why Verratti spoke to him in Spanish.
Maybe.
Pep probably speaks French too.
Yeah,
what do I know?
He does.
What gets me is, I don't want to say Paris Saint-Germain dominated the first half, because dominate is a big word.
Hmm.
But I felt like they were never really threatened seriously in the first half.
Just a foot and shot just before the break, that's all.
That was at the very end, right? And they had and obviously they scored the goal. There was the Paredes chance. It looked to me like they really held the pitch very, very well in the first half. And so the inevitable question to Pep is, what did you do to change it? And he explained, I saw him speaking on Sky Italia, but he said, look, we weren't aggressive enough off the ball.
Mm.
We were a little too preoccupied about our position on the pitch and the threat of the counter. And so we needed to go and kind of engage them further up and force errors and then win the ball and make them chase us.
Yeah, there's a few. That was really interesting. He said that they were not themselves in that first half, that they didn't play with freedom. And he also said this was the first semi-final of a lot of those players in that team. And I think he said that there was the feeling that they didn't want to make a mistake, so they maybe were a bit too cautious, which I thought they were. And that's why PSG was so good and so impressive in that first half as well. In the second half, when they got more aggressive, then they got their rhythm back a bit more, played with more intensity, and because they're so fit. I mean, they're so fit physically. That's why they control that second half much better. And PSG struggled really to get the ball back from the back like they did in the first hour, really, or first 55 minutes. And then if you don't get the ball to Mbappe and Neymar or Verratti, then there's nothing PSG can do. And that's why Neymar and Mbappe completely disappeared in the second half.
You make a point about the fitness there. And I know people always use it as an excuse, but in Paris Saint-Germain, you have a lot of players who've had injuries, who've come back.
Mm.
And I also think mentally, you are in a title race. And I think that takes a lot. That takes a ton out of you versus Manchester City, who, and again, it's a credit to them. They basically won the league in February, if not before that. So I think I would agree that is a big issue. And by the way, one thing that even people who don't like Pep, I think, have to concede is that he says stuff like that. He talks football. He gives football answers. He doesn't come up with nonsense. You had to give him a kick up the backside to motivate them in the second half and whatever. Like, he actually gives footballing answers to footballing questions.
Because the talk was a lot, but they need a number nine. Bring Gabriel Jesus on at halftime because, look, there's no one in the box. They've got no relay there, blah, blah, blah. The problem was not the false number nine or real number nine in that first half. The problem was that their press was not working. It's as simple as that. And if City's press, if you can play through the City press and find a variety higher up the pitch on Neymar or Di Maria, then they would be on their back foot, which they hate. You'll be coming at them. Your full backs will cause them problem, which they hate again. And that's why PSG was so good. As soon as they press, and that's not Gabriel Jesus going to change your press.
Well, he will press with more intensity.
Yeah, but Bernardo Silva presses. Yeah, but Bernardo Silva presses probably more and better than Gabriel Jesus. The thing is,
I think he presses different. I think Jesus has a higher intensity.
Surely for not as long as Bernardo. Duracell Bunny.
I know. I think Bernardo Silva is more about stamina, and his 50th pressing run will probably be better than Jesus's 50th pressing run. But if you bring Gabriel Jesus on at halftime, when he's fresh. I think there is some credence to that.
But I don't think you needed to. And the proof was that
they
didn't bring him on and they won. So
Pep is a pretty good coach. I think he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly. But that's what I mean. I think it was more about getting Bernardo and De Bruyne higher up on the pitch, more aggressive, and everybody, the whole block behind, the same. And it doesn't matter if you leave a lot of space in behind, because you don't let the PSG players being able to hit that ball to Mbappe in behind. And Mbappe completely disappeared in that second half as well.
Yeah, and I'll get to Mbappe in a minute. I think there was also probably an element from Pep of saying, well, this is a two-legged encounter. We're 1-0 down. If I leave Bernardo on the pitch, then we can also keep the ball and make them chase us. And even if we don't score, a 1-0 defeat isn't great. But I can live with that, and we can stuff these guys back at the Etihad. I think that plays into it too. I mean, I think, we often think of attacking managers and whatever and being proactive, but I think these people are also very strategic in the way they think. You brought up Mbappe. I thought in the first half he didn't get his shots off perhaps the way he would have liked to, but it was obvious he and Neymar conditioned the way City played.
Yeah, and the threat that he represented. It was such a big game for him because of what happened in 2017 when he was his first start in the Champions League of all his career. He was only 18 and 2 months with Monaco at the Etihad against City, and he torn them apart home and away and home. Because with all the talk about him being the next, already the big thing, him and Haaland, the move or not the move, the extension or not the extension, the fact that all the big clubs are after him, and because it's a semi-final of the Champions League, he wanted to be the star. He had no shot. I'm not even talking shot on target. He had no shot, full stop, which never happened to him in the Champions League before, which I think is big credit to the way Pep and City organized themselves in the second half, especially because in the first half, as you said, he was a threat. But it was just very disappointing. And I don't know if he tried to overplay it because he wanted to be so decisive in a game like this. So he forced himself a bit too much. There was a couple of times where I thought he should have taken a shot. His 1v1 were not as lethal as they usually are. And I think Ruben Dias defended really, really well on him. And I think it's a real shame.
It's a good point about Ruben Dias. I mean, whenever we talk about who Manchester City's player of the season might be, and I say there's so many candidates who we struggle, but you can make a very strong case for the impact that Ruben Dias has had this year.
You know how many games he's played for City now in all competitions?
A million.
45.
Okay.
Do you know how many he lost?
No.
3. The dude lost 3 games out of 45 in all competition this season. It's just incredible. The win ratio is just, for someone who's just arrived, who's 23, who never moved out of Portugal before. For all I know, he never took a plane before. Do you know? And
I would assume he probably had.
Yeah,
yes.
He probably went on holiday somewhere very nice. But arriving in a team like this.
I think the football team he played for probably played in European
maybe as well. I give you that. But the point still stands of, okay, you're going into somewhere completely new to you. Yeah. Or he spoke the language before, which is a big plus. But I just think he's been incredible.
One thing that always strikes me, and I've made this point before about Paris Saint-Germain versus Manchester City. Manchester City are a collective, right? We always go on about all the money that was spent. And look, and one of the few teams whose wage bill went up, and they have phenomenal players. But when you compare these two teams, and I ask myself, who is the most talented individual on the pitch? By far, I would have Neymar at number one and Mbappe at number two, or the other way around. Take your pick. And then, with all due respect, we would probably say De Bruyne.
Yeah.
Right? And then probably the next list, the next 5 or 6 guys would all be City players, right?
Yeah.
I think it's interesting because football's obviously it's a team game. It's a collective game. We have managers who generally exist to make it more of a collective game, right? Pochettino is a system manager. Pep is obviously a system manager as well. Mm. And yeah, I'm just fascinated by the struggle of the individual versus the system, and how having Neymar and Mbappe can just terrify a system, which is what I think what we saw in the first 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Equally, for all of Paris Saint-Germain spending, and I go back to this, this is a team that has two top 10 players in the world, three or four very good players. Marquinhos is outstanding. Verratti can be outstanding. I don't know how far more you would push it actually as being like really outstanding. Di Maria maybe. Used to be.
Yeah, and Di Maria, Navas, but that's it.
But, you go through the rest and you know who these players are. I mean, Michel Bakker, maybe one day in a parallel universe. Florenzi is a guy who's been rejected by the last two clubs he was at.
Yeah.
Idrissa Gueye, who suddenly became Ghana Gueye and or just Ghana in the whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't get that.
Yeah, but Paredes. No, but yeah.
But this is a guy who comes from Everton. Yeah. Paredes is a guy.
But that's why.
It's remarkable. I mean, when people say, "Oh, financial fair play. That's all bogus. It's all nonsense." Well, no.
Yeah.
It limited them.
Yeah.
They had more money. They could have gone 1-11 with better players, but they weren't able to.
Did what City do with FFP?
Well. I'm only joking.
But you're right.
But there's different approaches. City, as you know, as Khaldun always tells us, we don't buy 100 million. You know, there's this great clip. This is on Manchester City website where Khaldun is interviewed by some demented lickspittle, right? Who says, like, people say we've spent too much. He's like, that's not true. We've never spent 100 million on a player. Other clubs have done that, which... Yeah, okay, it's true.
You spent 15 million on five
fullbacks. You allocated your resources differently.
Yeah.
And for a manager like Pep, that's probably a good thing. It's suitable.
But what I would have loved, Gab, and we obviously can't go back on time on everything, but both Mbappe and Neymar's transfers were offered to PSG, which I don't think were planned per se, in the sense that Neymar decided to leave Barcelona. He had that release clause, 222 million euros. He said to PSG, "Hey, if you want me now, you can get me. Come and get me." But that was not, it was not PSG approaching Neymar that summer. Certainly not that summer. And with Mbappe, it was very similar. What would have happened? What would look this PSG team had Neymar not wanted to leave and would still be at Barcelona, let's say, and Mbappe had agreed to go to Real Madrid, like Monaco asked him to do, or Monaco and Real Madrid had an agreement already in the summer 2017 anyway. So, what would the PSG team, right now look far more balanced and far more like the City one with 15 really, really good players and not two incredible players and then the rest really good players? I really wonder because
they made those deals because
they could. Not because they really planned them and pushed for them and really went after them, and because that was the plan.
You can also make the case equally if they had bought a bunch of really, really good players rather than two of the most marketable players in the world, would they be in a better position financially?
Yeah.
I would argue probably not, because Neymar and Mbappe elevate Paris Saint-Germain in terms of awareness around the world.
Yeah.
In a way, let's face it. I mean, I'm not saying this is a knock to City, right? But who's a marketable superstar at City, right? If we look at it that way, right?
No, completely.
Sponsorship, commercial, Kevin De Bruyne may be their best player. Maybe Phil Foden will become super marketable one day. I don't think we're there yet. Raheem Sterling might have been, although he's kind of fading now So I'm just fascinated by these two different approaches. I want to make another point that Pep said about Neymar. I don't know where it was quoted, but I saw the quotes. He said, If Neymar had stayed at Barcelona, they would have won two or three Champions Leagues more.
That's not true.
Nobody believes that.
And nobody knows anyway. maybe he could have, or maybe not. Maybe you, Pep, if you'd stayed at Barcelona, you could have won three or four more, but you decided to go. And he decided to go. I didn't get the point, and I wondered if it was a day he was in his pre-match press conference. And I didn't understand why he had to go at Neymar for leaving. Or if he was really a go at Neymar and criticizing him for leaving. But it didn't really make any sense to me, I thought.
Also, if Neymar had stayed at Barcelona and he would have signed a Messi-sized contract extension, can you imagine what Barcelona's books would look like now?
Wow.
How do we see the return leg, though? Because is it over? Is it not over?
Oh,
is there the classic Pep risk because obviously the knock on Pep has been, okay, yeah, nice. You know, let's pat you on the head, Pep. You won two Champions League titles, but you've won zero Champions League titles without Lionel Messi. You've been to zero Champions League finals without Messi.
Yeah.
And the conventional wisdom is that, well, you overthink it in big games,
yeah,
and you shoot yourself in the foot. That's what the critics say. I don't buy it at all. I think some of those times when they were knocked out in the last couple of years, I mean, you could make a case last year with Leon when, yeah, he put out that goofy lineup,
yeah,
and, but other situations, like the year that Liverpool won it, I think they were unlucky.
He still had Laporte at left back, though, against Liverpool, and you think, like, well, really?
But that's, I think over the two legs, I think City could have easily, it could have easily gone the other way, put it this way.
Yeah,
football, right? Take control. What's your vibe tell you? Because they're playing on Tuesday.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's tough. It's a tough task. You know, not many teams can go to the Etihad and win 2-0, not concede. I know United did it in the league in a very different context. I know Leicester won there, of course, and more than 2-0. But I think the Leicester game was a very different City team. The United game was a game where United took the lead on a penalty after 35 seconds, and after that defended really well and scored that second goal with that Luke Shaw run, and it was great from United. I'm not sure PSG can sort of replicate that kind of performance, but they have to believe, and they certainly will go there with the pressure will be on City in a way, because they've got more at stake now that they're through pretty much. If he stays at 0-0, they're through. If they lose 1-0, they're still through, and PSG will have to go believe and try to score early and then see if they can get that second goal. But of all the times we've been on the back of a remontada, and we were under pressure after playing so well in the first leg, I'm thinking that maybe there's that tiny chance that we could do that to them, and they could doubt if we score early. And I'm going to that game next week, and I'm really hoping that they could go there and just go for it. And if you lose 2-1 or 3-1 or even 3-0, it doesn't matter. You've tried, because you need something a bit special.
Well, all right. With that in mind, we know that we made the point before about fatigue, both mental and physical, this stage of the season. Given that Poch has won as many trophies as you have as a manager,
he won the French, what, French Community Shield.
The French Community Shield.
Yeah,
yes, okay.
Thank you.
I'm not talking about real
trophies.
Don't forget. Is there obviously they're in a title race? Will there be a temptation this weekend to say, all right, Colin Dagba, Moise Kean, you know, Thilo Kehrer, the rest of the Muppets,
you guys
play, and everybody else, we rest up for Tuesday. And look, if we have to, it could cost us the title, fine, but let's go and do that.
I think the temptation would have been higher had they won last night, let's say 1-0, or it was with 1-1 draw. Now that they lost 2-1, and I think in the history of the Champions League, only 7% of the times when you've lost at home the first leg 2-1, you've qualified for the next round. So 7% is a really low percentage. So I think they know it's a slim chance. They will go for it, but I think he would have maybe rotated more if they had a bigger chance to go through, if that makes sense. Now they play Lens on Saturday afternoon. He will rotate, and I think half of the team, probably maybe 70% of the team, won't play, but it won't be like a complete new 11 for the Lens game.
You just got a text from Wanda. I can reassure her, Icardi 110% starts, yeah?
Yeah, starts at the weekend.
But wanted to clear that.
And could start next week if you go for it. Maybe you play the four fantastic together and see what happens.
Who's the fourth fantastic?
Di Maria, Neymar, Mbappe, and Icardi.
What does Verratti have to do to become a fantastic?
Why can't he be a fantastic? But he's a defensive player.
He's a defensive player.
He's a kind of defensive
player. He played as an attacking midfielder.
Okay, come on, man. Okay, so maybe Icardi can start next week and you play the five fantastic
together. Five fantastics. That sounds much better. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com slash
Gab. Just go to Indeed.com/Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, Real Madrid against Chelsea, Jules. This finished in a draw. I think the conventional wisdom from what we saw was Real Madrid played the way they've played most of the season thus far. Chelsea, except for conceding the goal, which was a phenomenal strike by Karim Benzema. I'll let you go and do a little celebration there. Played the way they've done most of the season, defending well and missing chances at the other end. Because Timo Werner, I don't want to be critical because it was a great performance everywhere. N'Golo Kante was, I thought he monstered the midfield.
Incredible.
And that midfield, by the way, was the big game, or still is the big game, experienced midfield of Kroos and whatever. But he has no chemistry whatsoever up front, regardless of who plays, whether it's Werner and Pulisic or whatever. But he's trying to find the chemistry. But I also wonder, why do these people make the runs they do? Why does... Werner runs, he's fast, but I don't know if it's Tuchel telling him to make those runs where he runs wide or he doesn't set himself up for the passing angle.
Yeah.
It seems like unless the ball is over the top. And then obviously his finishing, I saw some stat today, he's missed, you know, opt of this definition, big chances. He's missed, 43 this season? Something
I know,
stupid
incredible.
Like that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm less concerned about that because that can come and go.
Yeah. At least there's the chances.
But I look at this and I say, wow, like...
To have gone that far and to have had the season... Well, the season since Tuchel arrived at the club, to have done so well while still looking and searching for what the best formula is going forward, those players and the last pieces of the jigsaw going forward, I think is pretty incredible from Tuchel. And it's far from perfect, so just think when they will be as good going forward than they are defensively, how much better they can be even.
It's not a knock on Tuchel at all. But I'm wondering if there's a parallel there with what he did towards the end of his time as Paris Saint-Germain, where he sorted out the defense and the midfield to make them watertight. And then up front, he said, well, I have so much talent that doesn't matter. Obviously, Chelsea have a lot less talent up front than Paris Saint-Germain do. But they have so many more options, right?
Yeah.
You can, especially in the Champions League, oh, look, Pulisic and Werner, for example, aren't doing it. Hey, look, this Havertz guy is pretty good. I've got Ziyech. I've got Hudson-Odoi.
Yeah, he's got plenty of players.
And but it seems like he just throws in what sticks.
There's still a structure to it, though. And that's why they were so good, because I thought the way their discipline and tactically, they were so much better than Real Madrid on Tuesday night. And I'm, as you know... why Marcelo is still playing football in 2021 is beyond me. It's really beyond me. And I think he'd do a far better job looking after the election ballots than he does on the football pitch.
For those who missed the story, Marcelo, who, yes, he's Brazilian, but he's had Spanish citizenship for 10 years. He's been called in to do his civic duty where he's got
good
to
for him.
Basically go and I guess, oversee a local polling station. He's been asked to do
perfect.
That.
Perfect. He'd be better at that than at left back in football.
Which would imply that he would miss the return leg because of quarantining rules. It's not going to happen. They're going to give him a pass and dispensation.
But he should not be playing anywhere. He should not be playing. I'm not sure about the back five either. I'm not sure about Vinicius and Benzema, the two up front. It worked against Liverpool. I'm not sure. It certainly didn't work there. And I think Tuchel and Chelsea should have won that game. They were by far the better side. Real Madrid had one shot on target, that incredible strike from Benzema, and that's it. Now this could come back to haunt them at the Bridge next week if Real Madrid step up a bit, play with more intensity, play better, and maybe play finally in a 4-3-3 formation.
I think it's been an interesting season for Conte because he's had his injuries. He even when he came back a lot of time more recently, I don't know if it had to do with Ramadan as well. He wasn't playing as often. Obviously, Kovacic suspended for this. Or no, he wasn't suspended. He's injured.
Yeah.
He was suspended before. But he goes out there and puts in a man of the match performance.
Masterclass. I mean, and Cesc Fabregas tweeted after the game saying, you know, never doubt him. He plays for two. He's the one for big games, etc. Which is true. And I do think maybe people had forgotten. or maybe you take it for granted that he's as good as that.
Well, because I think it's also because he hasn't been.
Yeah, he hasn't played much.
He hasn't played much. Hasn't been injured. When he has played, he hasn't.
Yeah, but
he hasn't been great over the last 6 months.
I know, but you can't be surprised by that kind of performance that he put.
In a game like that is unbelievable.
And
you're not surprised because you've seen him do it before. Yeah. It's just we hadn't seen him do it of late.
I mean, he was man of the match against Atletico Madrid, second leg. He was man of the match at Liverpool when they won that game, where he was exceptional again. That night, I remember speaking to Tuchel, and Tuchel said, like, Kante is a gift. He said, I've never seen anything like this before in my whole career. He said, even at training, we get the GPS data, and we look at, and this is training, let's say like a Tuesday morning at training. And he said, we are gobsmacked by the figures and the numbers that we get from his GPS after training session. He said, it's ridiculous. We've never seen anything like this. And yet they've been very cautious with him because of the injuries, because he turned 30, because he's certainly not the player he was at Leicester 5 years ago. But when I see him play on Tuesday night in the rain, like torrential rain, against Real Madrid and against Casemiro, Cruz and Modric, after a day of fasting and doing the Ramadan, so not eating anything until the game, until halftime, and yet he's everywhere on the pitch. He's just, and yet even when he has the ball, sometimes you could still see he's not really sure what to do with the ball in the last 30 yards. But he is just incredible, I think, and he deserves so much credit for his game, and for the whole career that he's had. Because again, and we've talked a lot about it, but this is someone who no one believed in when he was a kid, when he was growing up in Paris. No academies, everybody turned him down. No one believed that he could ever make it, even at a like third division kind of level. And yet, his determination and the courage and the talent saw him going through it. But my God.
My favorite N'Golo Kante story, which I think sums him up, obviously, you should have said he turns 30. I think he still looks like he's about 12 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
It is a wonderful story about when he arrived at Leicester, and he was in the car park outside the training ground or the stadium or whatever, waiting for his ride. And several of the coaches came out, or maybe the club staff, they come out and they see him, and they're like, and they go up to him and says, "Are you okay, little boy? Are you waiting for your mom to come and collect you?"
No way.
They didn't know who he was, and he looks, you know, he's short, but also he just looks so youthful. And he's just kind of like, you know, it's like kind of smiley and quiet and whatever. And they thought he was little boy lost, you know, which, so I mean, what a pro.
Incredible.
Okay, Real Madrid, we've been through this with Zizou. You question the back three. I thought Eder Militao played well.
But he would have played great in the back four.
Yeah, but then you don't play Nacho. Then you play Nacho at left back.
Yeah, or Odriozola. I know, but Gab, Marcelo was a liability through the... he played an hour or something? It was a liability. So you played with 10 men already anyway. You know, he ran 4 kilometres in the first half. So you're under pressure. You're by far the worst. You're beaten by a much better team than you in that first half. And he's your left wing back, and he runs 4 kilometres.
So you would have gone... Would you have gone 4-3-3 and put on Asensio or something, somebody like
that?
Yeah,
definitely. Definitely. And because I also think that as good as the job that Conte did on Cruz, because Cruz never had the time to control the game and the pace of the game like he usually does, I think if you give him more option going forwards, then I think Cruz can have a much better impact on your game.
I think that was the thinking with the wing backs, right? So that he would always have the wide option, but it just didn't work out. I think in part because Marcelo has trouble getting up and down the pitch.
Completely.
I think they've gotten so much into his head that, oh, we need you defensively, and you know, you can't go up and not come back, that he wasn't even effective going forward.
Yeah.
I wonder if this maybe wouldn't have been a game for Valverde.
Real Madrid had a lot of players missing, you know, so which is not an excuse, but doesn't help. No Sergio Ramos, no Lucas Vazquez, no Valverde, no Ferland Mendy. I mean, Mendy is a huge loss, and we saw it, not just for Marcelo, and, you know, we don't want to pick too much on Marcelo. Well, yeah, we do, but you know, it's a big miss. So
Eden Hazard fairy tale in the return leg?
Imagine Aston for Bridge as well. And Courtois. Imagine Courtois saves everything, and then Hazard scores one goal and that's it. They win 1-0. And like you said earlier, they're very capable of it.
Yeah.
They are very capable.
That's the thing, and that's why Thomas Tuchel, I think, has to remain vigilant.
Mm.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, enough Champions League. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Bayern have just about gotten themselves a new manager. It's Julian Nagelsmann from RB Leipzig. It's a 5-year deal and reportedly anywhere between 15 million to 30 million in compensation. Ooh, is this a good deal?
It will be a good deal only if it's successful. That's all we can say. Well,
thank
it's
you,
a lot of money.
Thank you, Captain.
No, it's a lot of money for a manager. No one has ever paid nowhere near that amount for a manager before. So, yeah, of course, if it works.
Chelsea, Andre Villas-Boas might have been 15. A little bit higher.
No, 15
well,
million.
Well, if it depends. If it's at
no,
the bottom
that's,
end.
It's more, yeah,
I don't believe it's 30 million. That. I don't believe it's 30
No, but it would probably be around 25 million euros, which is a lot of money for a manager. Listen, he's 33. This is his dream. He's from Munich. So I'm glad he's fulfilling his dream. Let's see if it works. You could argue that his methods might not be suited certainly the way we saw it at RB Leipzig and at Hoffenheim to this dressing room. Maybe not, but he's an incredible, talented manager. So let's hope that...
I love Nagelsmann. For me, one of the big things, and when I said before that Bayern, you know, need to worry about transition, and obviously they are worrying about it, and I used the word major surgery, which annoyed a lot of people. I'm not going to go that far, but the point is, if you're going for Nagelsmann for 5 years, yeah, it means you are trusting the post-Müller-Lewandowski-Neuer era.
Yeah.
And so this factor where, ooh, how does he deal with the big veterans and the big names and the big egos, I don't think it's going to be
as prevalent. Yeah,
it's
yeah,
not
yeah.
going to be such an issue with the players,
yeah, you're right,
because the players will be on their way out. Could be an issue with the people upstairs, but hey, Venice
again,
and Rummenigge aren't going anywhere.
No, Rummenigge is leaving in the summer. Oli Kahn will replace him. You would think that Salihamidzic...
These guys never actually leave, right?
Who I know, but still, you would think that Salihamidzic and Nagelsmann have spoken already, so you won't have the kind of tension that you had between Flick and Salihamidzic.
I'll make you a bet.
Well, we see, but
Nagelsmann is more valuable to them than Brazo. I think Salihamidzic, I think he's going to need to know his place.
But that means that Leipzig now need a new boss, and it was confirmed as we were recording this pod that Jesse Marsh, the US manager of RB Salzburg, has made the move to the cousin club.
He's been there before as an assistant.
Yeah.
It's a remarkable rise. He becomes the third American manager to coach in a Big Five league. Reno Matarazzo, of course, already there at Stuttgart, already did really well. One fun fact about this, all three are Ivy League graduates.
Yeah, I saw your tweet. Yeah.
I don't know if there's any message in that, but I think what's also true, people always talk about sort of the people make a big deal about what does this mean for U.S. coaches on the pathway into Europe. I don't know that it means that much, because Bob Bradley had to coach in a World Cup, had to go coach Egypt, had to find American owners before being given a shot in Europe.
Yeah.
Matarazzo had to come over as like a no-name and work his way up from the very bottom rung. Jesse Marsh, very, very smart guy, already worked for the RB
family.
Organization,
yeah, of course.
Obviously, when he was in New York. So I don't think all of a sudden this opens the door and say, oh, look, they're all great, you know. So,
no, but it's great for U.S. soccer, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Spotify founder Daniel Ek is doubling down on saying he wants to buy Arsenal. Josh Kroenke insists the club isn't for sale. Jules, I normally believe that everything has its price, right?
I guess so. Good luck to Daniel Ek and whoever he has with him, if it's true that he really has Thierry Henry, Patrick Vieira and Dennis Bergkamp, which I'm still not really convinced by. But if he wants to put an offer on the table, the Kroenke might
this is the question,
think about
right?
it. But I don't think they would sell any time anyway.
We've reported that they're looking for $2 billion, which I think personally is a bit much, given the club situation and the club's dead cash situation. But is there a scenario where if he can get Bergkamp, Henry, and Patrick Vieira to come out and speak publicly against the Kroenke family, and if you get the fans to turn the screws, and Robbie Lyle and all this stuff, can it happen?
I don't know.
Yeah.
And as we said on Monday, I'm sorry, but you keep those things private and quiet. You don't go all over social media doing interviews on television.
I disagree. It depends on your style. If you think it's a battle you can win, you do it. I'm more less concerned about the fact that he never ever tweeted about Arsenal. Like it was like that's a bit odd.
Manchester United hosts Roma in the Europa League in a few hours on Thursday evening. But Gab, tell me about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and the Roma fans, they didn't really like something that he said after the qualification against Granada, right?
I thought this was a lot of fun, right? Moments after the qualification, they asked him, well, what do you think? You're getting Roma next? He's like, I don't know. I haven't seen them play. I don't know anything about them, right?
And he means right now how they play, was the lineup kind of thing.
This is the thing with flash interviews, you stick them out. I'd be more worried about what he said later when he had time and he says, oh, Roma are, you know, like all Italian teams, they're a great defensive side, tight at the back, and that's Roma are not at all. But he walked it back. He said, look, you know, I don't mean any disrespect. What was fun was the Roma fans, they put banners up outside Trigoria before they gave them a send-off. 1,000 people
brilliant,
strong.
Brilliant, by the brilliant. Way. Yeah.
Look at the video. I retweeted it. It's fantastic. And he said, and basically they said, they had his quote, they had his picture, and he said, make sure he remembers who we are. I love it. It's all in good fun, good spirit.
Exactly.
Brendan Rodgers has said he's not interested in leaving Leicester right now, which I guess rules him out of the Tottenham job. Is this the right move for Brendan? Stay where he is?
Yeah, that doesn't mean that he would not leave. But certainly right now, he's in a better position than he would be at Spurs.
Much better position at Leicester
Champions
than at Spurs.
Football,
right now,
the squad,
in this
right now, the squad, Champions League football next season, ambition, money, all of that, I think it would make sense for him. Sticking with Tottenham, they're strongly linked with Erik ten Hag, the Ajax manager. And they also have been offered Wolves Nuno and some even say Gareth Southgate. Gab?
Look, it's a big job. It's in London. It's a high-profile job. Gareth Southgate, post-Euros.
No. Impossible. No, thanks.
But no, because you wouldn't want him, or no, he
no,
wouldn't want him?
No, surely they would not want him. Yeah, thank you.
The Nuno one is funny, given who Nuno's... I mean, this is not a knock on Nuno.
No.
But his agent is Jose Mourinho's agent. Yeah. So I'm not sold on Ten Hag either. I'm not sure he is a good fit for this club, personally.
I think he would be.
Okay, let's go back. For the 10 millionth time on Harry Kane. You know my views. I think Harry Kane shouldn't feel any pressure
Monday.
To leave to win things. But he did come out and he said, it's great that I'm winning individual awards, but I want to think things as a team. I want to win things with my team, and that's not happening right now.
Yeah.
So people are reading this, reading the tea leaves. Oh, look, Gab, you're wrong. He wants to win things with a team, and he's not going to do it at Spurs, so he's going to move on. Again,
but if we want to move on, if he feels that Spurs are not building a team that will enable him to win trophies.
Is he sending some kind of a cult message?
But he doesn't need to send. I think Daniel Levy knows pretty well what Harry Kane wants and where he wants to go. So if you're Spurs and if you're the owner of Spurs...
Where does he want to go, Jules?
To win things. He can't win things with his current team and Ryan Mason as a manager. So
they're getting
bring
a new
good
one
manager.
In the summer.
Well, yeah, let's see who it is. Let's see what you can do to strengthen that team. But listen, Harry Kane is not going to stay if he doesn't think that they can win stuff. As much as he loves this club. That's where we disagree. Gab, everybody has been speaking about the Super League, of course, in the last 10 days or so. But actually, you've asked someone, a European semi-finalist, what he thinks about it.
That's right. I have a piece up with the Roma manager. So, Paolo, over to you. What were your thoughts when you heard of the Super League?
When I saw the news about the Super League, I stay very worried. But today I'm very proud. I'm very proud to be part of the football because we gave a big example to the society. In football, the most important is the supporters. It's true, the biggest clubs, they want more money. But they forget also, it's them who spend also the biggest money. It's these big clubs who pay 100 millions, 150 millions for the players. And also this create a big problem in the smallest clubs. I think the support, the coach, the players. I believe we are all so proud of what's happened in this moment in football.
Thank you, Paolo. It's the first time we have a current manager participating in quick hits. Barcelona play Granada in a few hours, and they could go top of La Liga. But Jules, the big news is President Joan Laporta will meet Lionel Messi's dad for the first time.
Yes, big news, big chance to come over. We had fake news this week that PSG had offered Messi a 2+1 contract, which was not true at all. Let's see if Laporta can convince the family to stick around and sign a new deal.
So much for that story whereby he'd already signed with Manchester City.
Yeah.
Everything's on the table.
Details of Andrea Agnelli's testimony in the Luis Suarez citizenship case have emerged. Gab, how is he looking for the Juve president, who, let's be honest, has had a tough last 2 weeks?
Yeah, this is the whole thing where Luis Suarez needed an Italian passport to go and be able to play for Juve as part of the Italian passport. Because he needs an EU passport. He is eligible, but he needed to go and he needed to take language lessons. It turns out that he was basically briefed in advance and the guy can't speak a lick of Italian, and audio of this emerged. And Agnelli basically said, "Oh, look, I had nothing at all to do with this. Fabio Paratici, who is my director of football, he dealt with anything. I had no idea this was going on. Yeah. Suarez was offered to me. I've got nothing to do with this. Look, I'm not surprised
you
would have
told
Agnelli." No, I think Paratici is a convenient whipping boy. This is the same Paratici who last week said Andrea Agnelli's been transparent throughout this Super League thing.
God.
Okay, yeah, whatever. Sticking with Serie A, there were wins for Napoli and Lazio on Monday, defeat for Milan. It's five teams for three Champions League places.
Aye.
Bunch of head-to-heads coming up. Jules, who's getting them?
That's tight. I love it, Gab. I have to say, I love it. I mean, Lazio have the game in hand against Torino. If they win that, They're very much even more in it than they are right now. Then you've got the Juve-Inter game, the Juve-Milan game. You've got Atalanta-Milan. I'm worried for Milan, I have to be honest, who went from second to fifth after this weekend, they lost.
They're not trending in the right direction.
They're not trending in the right direction, but they can still, of course, they can still make it, but they will have to put big performances. I'm worried about Juve as well, I have to be honest. So
you didn't say you're worried about Napoli. Can I extrapolate?
So Napoli, Atalanta will make it.
And Osimhen.
So then I've got one between Milan, Juve and Lazio, because I'm really convinced, Atalanta for sure, Napoli I think will make it. So it's one between Juve, Lazio and Milan. Juve because really should. I would love Lazio because, you know, I think it's a great story for Inzaghi too. But Milan deserve to be. They've been in the top four all season. They've been leading the league for 33% of the season or something like that. And now they're fifth.
Unless God punishes them for signing up to the Super League.
Oh, can you imagine? Yeah. Maybe.
God wouldn't punish Juventus.
What a blow it would be, though, if they.
God would not punish Juventus for that because I think he's already written them off.
Arsenal are linked with Borussia Dortmund. Julian Brandt, Gab, is 24, hasn't had a good season, but hey, he might just cost 20 million.
Yeah, this is exactly what Arsenal need, right? bring in another guy who hasn't done it, who's not exactly strongest minded, and bring in a guy who plays a position where you already have a whole bunch of other people, right? Like, I know Julian Brandt can play in central attacking midfield. I would not want him to play there. If Arsenal can't keep Odegaard, fine. You've got Emile Smith Rowe. Play him.
Yeah.
You know, or and bring in some other Muppet on loan, like so for the Dani Ceballos, also you have an alternative. Why mess around with this? He's not value.
I agree.
I know, look, I like the fact he's younger. If you find somebody to take Willian away, sure. By all means, go for it. But you know, you already have, or take Pepe away, by the way.
You know,
if you want to do that and you think Brandt's going to, I don't think Brandt is better than Pepe personally. I don't think he's a different ceiling. You know,
I
he
agree.
Was good at Leverkusen.
That
was a few years ago.
Leave him at home.
I know it's not a lot of money, but 20 million post-pandemic with the losses Arsenal have had, I don't know. I think there's better areas where you want to spend your money.
Spend your money on Buendia if you can't get Odegaard.
No, not Buendia.
Yeah,
enough
of course
wingers.
Buendia.
How many freaking wingers do you need?
He plays central. Leave me alone. You can play number 10 central. That's perfect. It would be so good for Arsenal.
You have Emile Smith-Rowe.
All day.
Just unleash the Smith-Rowe and get him signed up. Chelsea have reportedly put a price tag on Tammy Abraham. It's £40 million. Does that sound right to you, Jules?
I think that sounds cheap to me. Really cheap. And if I'm a club who needs someone like Tammy Abraham, who scored, I think his non-penalty XG this season is something like 0.56. I mean, he's doing well. I think he's doing really well. And he did well last season. And it might not be the finished product, but it doesn't matter. He's, 22 years of age or 23 years of age. There's plenty of time for him to get even better, to develop. But he's strong, he's a good finisher, I think, he's intelligent, he has good pace. I don't know, one, I don't know why they would not keep him, unless they really need money, but...
Or if there's a contract issue, I don't know.
I don't know, but if you're a club in England that needs that kind of player, go for it every day.
I would completely agree with you. Tammy Abraham is homegrown. I think he's comfortable with being a reserve striker. Now, obviously, he wants to play occasionally. But he looks at this, and obviously, for whatever reason, he's hardly played under Tuchel. But with Giroud gone, why go and spend money? I think you need a big guy. You play in the Premier League, right?
Yeah.
He's a big guy. He's physical. He gives you so much effort. His finishing can be better. I don't think he's super technically gifted, but that's fine.
No, but yeah.
You need a guy like that. He's got a good attitude.
He's a decent finisher. Yeah.
And look, 40 million post-pandemic might be in this market, might be a huge amount of money. Yeah. You don't know. You might say, what a great deal. But if you're Chelsea, you're going to have to replace Giroud anyway.
Yeah.
You're not really going to go into next season. Oh, my strikers are Havertz, who's not a striker, and Werner, who doesn't finish. He's not a striker either. Yeah.
So. Yeah. So if you let him go as well, it's two that you need to bring in the summer.
Yeah. I mean, unless there's some dude that we haven't heard of, because Chelsea always do this, some 18-year-old like giant who's a center forward. But no, screw that.
Inter, via the holding company, have reportedly secured some 200 million euros in financing from Bain Capital. Gab, does this mean that Antonio Conte can go on a huge spending spree in the summer?
No, of course it doesn't. And they're all saying the same thing. Listen, I'm just going to make a prediction because this is how football fans work. And I have to say, this is how we in the media work, right? The message has been, especially after the enormous amounts of money that they spent, chickens have come home to roost. So they said, more young players. Yeah. Cut the wage bill, which is going to be difficult because they have all these old guys who are difficult to move because they're on big money, whether it's Alexis Sanchez or Vidal or Matias Vecino. I think Vecino's contract might be up finally, but Kolarov, nobody's going to take these people off you unless you pay for them to leave, like Arsenal did with Ozil. So this has to be the message, and that money has to go to service the debt. Mm. Right? Very, very simple.
Yeah.
To keep the, because there are rules that still apply. You can't just keep ignoring them. So I hope the club stands firm. I hope they're clear on this. I hope Conte, he's hinted, people are saying, well, I need this and that. Listen, Conte, I know you always want to win. I hope Conte stays, works with the players he has, integrates more of the younger players, because Inter do have some good young players who I think can use more playing time. And move forward that way. Enough of saying I need a proven winner.
Is there a risk that they might have to sell one of the most valuable assets, let's say a Lukaku, just for the sake of it, to be able to reinvest that money into strengthening the squad in other positions that they want? Or they just,
if you sell Lukaku,
try to avoid doing that?
Yeah, no, I don't think Lukaku wants to leave. I don't think, I mean, unless somebody shows up with 200 million or whatever, or 150 million, it's not going to happen. There are others who are saleable assets. Barella, Bastoni. They do have player, and obviously Lautaro. But I think, I don't think that is the intention. The intention is no more spending and just bleed these guys out who are there.
Yeah.
Hakimi. At some point, somebody shows up with stupid money, somebody has a great Euros or whatever, that could all change. But I don't see that happening. Ajax are introducing a new third kit that is inspired by Bob Marley to coincide with the 40th anniversary of his passing. Jules, something tells me you're going to love this.
I love this. I love the love story between Ajax and the Marley family. You know, one of his sons singing before games now and again.
Obviously, the song Three Little Birds,
Three
on
Little
my
Birds,
windows.
Exactly.
On Ajax's unofficial club anthem.
It's one of the anthems of the club, you're right. And this shirt is very much inspired from Three Little Birds. So well done to Ajax. And to Bob Marley's family as well, and keeping all that legacy alive and everything. And we knew how much Bob Marley loved football, so it's the right fit.
Used to play in Battersea Park just down the road.
Yeah, exactly. Gab, we know your thought on Zlatan's new contract extension, but you have some stats as well on what happened to him and to Milan since his big clash with Romelu Lukaku in the Coppa d'Italia.
Yes, and the alleged voodoo comments.
Voodoo,
I don't
comments.
Want to suggest that somebody did do voodoo, because
well, he reversed the voodoo to Zlatan.
Exactly. Somebody else might have done that. Because, basically, we're talking in the last 4 months, his scoreline reads 3 goals, 2 red
Ooh.
Cards,
Ooh.
1 crazy motorbike ride to
Ooh.
Appear at a music festival,
Ooh.
1 investigation for
Ooh.
Violating lockdown rules, 1 investigation for
Ooh.
Owning shares in a betting company,
Ooh.
And a public spat with the king,
Ooh.
LeBron James.
Ooh.
Yeah, not the greatest run.
No.
He's going to have to step his game up to make the contract worthwhile. Right, that brings us to an end. But, Jules, we got to come back on Monday.
We have to.
It's the exciting German Cup DFB Pokal semifinals now. Just kidding. No, there's that too, but there's lots of other good stuff. So we're going to be back. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.